Have you ever wanted something so desperately that you just push straight forward even after God seems to be closing door after door? Has it ever felt like you're trying to shove a square peg in a round hole and you don't understand why? And then maybe, wouldn't it be nice if God sent you a glowing neon sign pointing, "Here, go this direction, and I'll give you what you want." Well, it happened to my friend, and she is on the show today telling us all about her journey to have a second baby and what she did when God closed doors, what happened when she finally took the time to pause. It is an incredible give you goosebumps story, and I can't wait for you to hear this chat I had with Sarah Fraser. It's all coming up today on She Read It Herself. I have to say, I say this every episode, that I'm so excited for today. I'm so excited for this episode. But today I really mean it. Because not only do I have on my first guest, so you will have to maybe guide me through it, my guru guest, but she is also one of my best friends in the world. Many of you know her, my dear friend, Sarah Fraser.
Natasha, I'm honored. I can't believe I'm the first guest on She Read It Herself.
This is just like, it's messing with my mind. I feel like we're doing it backwards because we always do podcasts together, but you usually take the lead and then I answer back. So I feel a little out of sorts here, but it's okay because you're my girlfriend and this is what we do. We spill each other's guts to each other.
For years, I wanted to be the host and now I don't want to be the host at all. I'm trying to get hired as a co-host on any show again like that. I that Kane taught me well and I wish I could be hired for anything. I love being a co-host. Being a host is stressful. You're always thinking, next question, but I need to be listening. I need to share some of what is personal to me about this person, but not too much. It's a very delicate balance to host.
Well, we'll see how it goes. You might have to hold my hand a bit. And for anybody who does not know who the lovely Sarah is, Sarah, I mean, we just recorded a different episode together and you brought up that it's coming up on almost 20 years that we've known each other. So when I first moved to DC because of my husband then at the time, you can go back to episode 2 if you have no idea what my insanity of a life story is, but he was the morning radio show host in the DC area. And his very first co-host was my dear Sarah Fraser. So we rode that whole journey together when he hired you, when he fired you, when he fired me as a wife. We wrote it all, but we stayed friends. And now you are the podcast guru with the Sarah Fraser Show. How would you describe your show if somebody asked you? I don't even know how to describe your show. You wear so many hats.
I do. I like to refer to it as a show that is pop curious. I do a lot of pop culture, but I do topics and I have people on that I'm curious about. And on the Sarah Fraser Show, we have welcomed everybody from serious authors like Emily Oster, who's an amazing Brown University professor, who's a writer for books like Expecting Better. And she digs into all the research about fertility and childbirth and misconceptions. And then I had on a woman that was married to a chandelier and she...
no transition there.
And then I do love shows like Sister Wives, which explores polygamy, although none of them are polygamous anymore. Now they're just full reality stars. So I call it Pop Curious because I love pop culture. When I started on the Kane Show, part of my job was Sarah's Dirty at 6:30 and 7:30 and 8:30. And I always had to give the celebrity update. And I love celebrity gossip. And then... I really love people's stories, hearing people's stories and learning something different. And I'm guilty of it. But I think the older you get in some ways, the more siloed you get in your thinking. So I try to challenge myself to have on guests that I'm like, I don't know if I'd ever agree with them, but let's hear what they have to say.
Well, I feel like as we're both getting older too, we're looking for more meaning in what we talk about and what we do. We both have been in the social media, the Instagram world for so long, trying to come up with content that people are going to click on, but maybe doesn't actually, it's shallow. It's just, it's for views. And now we both want to do something that makes a difference. But I'm 100%. Excited to have you on today, not just so we can gossip and chat together, which we would do for hours, but because of a journey that you've been on recently, and it fits in so perfectly with what we've been talking about, ladies, as we've been going through the book of John with how to wait in the uncertainty, what to do with worry and anxiety. How do you proceed when you don't know what God's answer is for what to do next? And you just went through all of the above and more on your journey for a second baby. How did you get through all of that? And take me through where you started and kind of when God started closing doors and you started to figure out what the path would be.
And by the way, it was your podcast episode, Worry, Poof, Be Gone, I think. I don't know. I'm probably getting yes. it. But that you, because you had texted me and you said, listen to this episode. And it was me to a T, because I have a 3-year-old, beautiful, healthy son. I'm so, so grateful for. Oh, by the way, I'm 42. So not like an ideal age to be trying to have a second child, but here I am. And for about 2 years, I have been trying to have a second baby. And our journey has just been met with the first 6 or 7 months, we couldn't get pregnant. Then it's actually probably a year ago this month, we were pregnant and I thought, okay, this is it. But I will tell you, and this is probably the beginning of sort of really surrendering to God and going deeper. From the start of that pregnancy, even though I would go in and they'd be like, okay, things are fine, I knew something was wrong because the baby was, she was always measuring like 4 days behind, 5 days behind. And my son, when I was pregnant with my son, he was 9 pounds when he was born. So he was always measuring like a week or 2 weeks ahead. Not crazy, like off the charts that they were worried, but they were always like, this is a big boy. So that made me nervous. And of course, you know, the doctor says, well, don't worry. You know, there's always variations and this happens all the time. And I kept trying to be like, okay. But I could never settle down in this pregnancy. And then I went in for the 12th week. Actually, it was a little after that, 13 weeks, but she'd stopped growing around like 10 or 11, 12 weeks.
You made it out of that first trimester. Like usually a lot of women think I get to 12 weeks and I can relax. You got past that.
Sort of. I'd gotten past, when you're over the age of 35, they usually recommend it's called like a no cell DNA blood test at 10 or 11 weeks. And essentially that just tests for a few things. Down syndrome. What else? There's like some other genetic, really kind of other genetic issues. There's probably about 4 that it tests for, and it tells you the gender of your baby. So I'd gotten that back and that all came back normal. So I did think that came back normal around 11 and a half weeks. So I did think things were going to be great. But when I went for my 12th week, which is a big indicator, they were having a really hard time measuring her. And then when I got the results, they were like, it's a week behind. Like it had always been about 4 days behind, but now it was like a week. So I remember calling my OBGYN and he's like, all right, well, and I was away on vacation. I would never do this again, because they kind of tell you stay put when you're older, your first trimester, for this reason. So he's like, all right, as soon as you get back, you need to come in. Well, it was like another week and a half of vacation and I went in and there was no heartbeat. So she probably passed pretty quickly and she really never measured to 12 weeks, you know? So went through that DNC process, healed. Went to a fertility specialist last fall and she said, well, you know, my issue is I have plenty of eggs. It's just the egg quality. So she said, why don't we do Lupron shots? Because it seems like maybe what's happening is you're ovulating too late. The eggs are too big and you're not getting a good egg. So we did these Lupron shots, which are super easy. You shoot them in your abdomen and you have sex on a schedule. And I was pregnant again. So, but this past fall, I had the miscarriage really early. We went in 6 weeks. There was like a teeny little heartbeat, maybe close to 7 weeks. And they wanted to see me, I think, at 8 and a half, like a week later, and there was no heartbeat. So that one never really got going. So
with these two, how did you feel like, as far as, you know, we talk a lot about having a peace that you're in God's will or that you're going down the right steps. Did you have uncertainty that whole time, or were you just hopelessly in love and thinking this is it?
No, so much anxiety, no peace. No peace to the point I hated it. I could not get into a mindset of like, let go and let God. I couldn't. I was so anxiety ridden. I thought about it constantly. What if something's going to go wrong? What if I just could not get control of my thoughts to just say like, let it be God's will. I just want a healthy baby. If this baby is meant to be, like, let it be. But if it's not, it's okay, God. Like, I turn it over to you and the right path will appear. I could not do that until I went through my IVF process this past spring.
Well, I love that you said that because so many people throw out that phrase, let go, let God. And it honestly irks me because it's not always that easy. And I love that you were able to say, you know, like, I have faith in God and everything, but sometimes you just can't let go. Like, it just feels almost, I don't want to say wrong, but it kind of feels wrong. Like, this just doesn't feel like this is going to be the right path. But when we want something desperately, we just keep moving forward.
I'm going to get a little emotional, but yes. Oh. And I actually had an acupuncturist say to me, he was like, oh, this is gonna like make me cry. But he said to me, he's like, the first pregnancy, I had so much anxiety. I just could not get control of myself. And he's like, you're going to be okay either way. And I'm like, I'm not though. Like, I have to have this baby. Like, it was so, I could not just let go. Like, I couldn't even fathom. And I hated that he said that. I was like, no, there is no okay if I don't have this child. And like, he just kept saying that to me, like, you're going to be okay either way. And when you can really get to a place where you just turn that over to a higher power and you're like, I will be okay, then like the best thing will happen. And it was so hard to do that. And then of course it wasn't okay. So that was like, it was very, very difficult, but I just hated living like that because he was actually right. I am okay. And I'm more than okay. You know, I do have this incredible son and husband and so many good things in my health and all this stuff. So he was right. But it was
sometimes it's so hard to comprehend that in the moment. It truly feels like I'm never going to be okay with this.
Right. Right. And I know, you know, this in other aspects of your life, it's like, how is it going to, there's no way it's going to be okay.
There's no, I felt like that when I lost the girls and was just sobbing on the bathroom floor, you know, like, this can't be happening again. I will never be okay. This will never get better. And I mean, here we are, oh my gosh, maybe 4 years, no, more than that, 4 or 5 years later, and they live with me full time, like, never could have seen that coming. But at the time, crying out to God, like, in just this pain, like a pain in like the gut of your stomach, like just true heartbreak and mourning. It's so hard to keep going in those moments. But you and your husband did, like, you didn't really take a break. You just kept going with, okay, what's the next option, right? Because you had the second miscarriage. And then did you wait a while or did you go straight to IVF?
Then we went through Christmas, and then in the 1st of January, I saw this other IVF doctor. I've learned a lot in this process, this amazing IVF doctor here in Los Angeles. And he was like, I love sometimes when you talk to somebody in science or someone that's not emotional about it. And he's like, okay, this sucks. Like, I'm really sorry. But he's like, you have eggs. He said, you should do IVF. But I'm going to be honest with you, you're going to have to do at least 2 rounds of IVF to get 2 good eggs. Because when you start in the IVF process, you realize, they always say, oh, it's just, you just need 1 good egg. Okay. But if we're really being honest, 1 egg only works and sticks for very few people. And most of those people are under the age of 40. When you're over 40, the IVF game is a whole different thing. So he said, you really need to do 2 rounds. And I had always made up my mind, I'm only doing 1 round of IVF because our insurance didn't cover it. It's about $26,000, $27,000 per round.
I was going to ask you that next. Yeah, the cost.
And I'm like, I have this beautiful son. I'm also a person I've always been curious about fostering to adopt. And also I'm open to using an egg donor because why not use like a 24-year-old's eggs? That sounds a hell of a lot better than my 42-year-old. So, but he said,
you never felt peace. Like, okay, IVF. Yes. This feels like the right way.
No,
it always never was laced with like uncertainty, like that little stirring inside of, I want to go this way, but it doesn't quite feel right. Would that be accurate?
It never felt great. I thought, I'm not doing two. Why would I do two rounds of this to try? Again, this isn't any guarantee to try to get two good eggs. And he also said to me, over the age of 40, I always tell women, he's been an IVF doctor for 20 years, three miscarriages is it. So meaning trying on your own. So he said to me, you ought to do a round of IVF or two rounds of IVF, get some eggs, try it for a baby on your own. Hopefully you get pregnant, you have a child on your own, and then you have these two eggs and you can have a third child with your IVF eggs. I thought, oh, this sounds amazing. Okay, I'm back up. I'm feeling great. So then, and I always have like kind of a group of people that I run things by. So I ended up getting connected with a woman who's been working in the egg donor space for a long time. And she and another woman actually had said to me, well, the best lab, the best doctor, the best lab to go to is in San Ramon, California. And what you find out with IVF is the doctor is only 40% of the process and 60% of the process is the lab. And that means the doctors are not, I don't even think they're necessarily doctors, but the lab scientists that are handling your eggs, fertilizing your eggs, monitoring them because they have to kind of rest and then they have to be fertilized and then they have to be watched and then they have to be tested. So 60% of success is about the lab. So they said, go to San Ramon. It has the best lab. So here I overrode my judgment because I liked the guy here in LA a lot, but their lab was okay. It wasn't phenomenal. It wasn't terrible, but it wasn't super great. But I really liked him. Okay. I go to San Ramon from the start. I just was like, I don't feel it. You know, like I just don't feel it. They were nice. It wasn't that they did anything inappropriate and they were nice, but it never felt great. So we start to go forward with this first IVF round. And I thought, but they have the best
lab. And this is with using that lab. So you basically ignored like your intuition or that little stirring telling you to pause and just went with logic. Like,
right.
Can I ask you a super personal question?
Yeah, of course.
When you were stopping before you and Dan made all these decisions, like, which lab do I go with? Or do I even try IVF? Do I try a third time on my own? Would you stop and pray and ask God before each one? Or was it like, I can think of times in my life where I've been so focused on the goal, like for me, my second marriage of just getting married again, that I had a relationship with God, but really I knew what I wanted and I was just moving forward regardless of any uneasiness I had. Where were you kind of in that spectrum?
That.
We've all done it, but yeah.
I should have prayed before the, and I truly should have pulled the plug the day I walked into that San Ramon office. Cause when I tell you, and it wasn't anything they did or it just was the vibe there, the feeling, the everything. I was just like, No, I don't like it. I don't
think this is going to work. That little nudging, that little like small voice that it nudges us. But when we really want something, sometimes we just shut it up.
Girl, I'll tell you from the start, I started those IVF shots, which were, this is pretty standard, Gonalef and Menopur, which are supposed to be egg stimulating hormones to help you grow more eggs. When I tell you, so, and then you know, you do the shots for a week and then they check in on you. Every time I would go, honey, there were eggs were disappearing left and right. I mean, they What was happening was, so when you do IVF, the ideal situation is, let's say for me, right? The very first base sonogram I went to, I had 12 of my own eggs.
Incredible. Yes, I remember this.
At 42, that's like amazing. Okay. So you would hope with a protocol on IVF that we'll get like, let's say 17, 18 eggs. And then from that, I should, if they could, if when they do the extraction, if I could get 18 eggs at 42, the chances of two of them being normal would be very, would be pretty high. So I start 12 eggs. Then I start these shots. The shots should be making you, you should have all of your eggs growing together at the same time, meaning by centimeter, right? They should right. all be, let's say, 6 centimeters and then 7. And then by 18 centimeters, they should be getting ready to pull the trigger shot and get your eggs. When I tell you, every time I would go in, none of them were growing the same or even close. And so what would be happening is two eggs would be enormous, 22, 23. So they'd say, okay, well, we're going to let those go, but don't worry, you have 8 more. So these 8 will grow together and then we'll pull the trigger shot. I'd go in a day later. 2 more would be huge. They'd be like, all right, we're going to let those go. So then probably 3 before I was supposed to do the trigger shot and the retrieval, you know, I talked to the nurse and I said, by the way, I have this Zomactin, which is HCG, which is supposed to help with egg quality for women that are older. I have this in my refrigerator. When am I supposed to start taking it? And Natasha, the reaction on the phone, she was like silent. She was like, they didn't tell you to start taking that. You should have been taking that days ago. I said, no. I mean, this is, by the way, this is a drug that is $1,500 probably. So she's like, let me call you back. So, you know, they get the doctor on the phone and, oh my God, well, why don't you save it in case you have to do a second round? And I said, well, that's why I came to you guys. I don't want to do a second round. All right, well, just hold on to it. Then the next day I get a call from the doctor. Lovely, very nice, very sweet. We're really sorry we've messed this up. And I'm going to give you my professional advice, which is I was down at that point to 4, honey, only 4 eggs from 12. I mean, we're going in reverse here when we should be going in the other way. If this ain't God speaking, she said, I will do what you want, but I think that we should just keep the money, you know, because you're about ready to spend $17,000 on this procedure because it's the anesthesia, it's all that stuff. Let's just hit pause. I think you should do another round and we should try a different protocol of drugs because I'm not sure how successful this is going to be. I am so grateful to her and to God to have that conversation because a lot of clinics would have done the procedure, taken my money, and probably no eggs would have been normal. So that is when, you know, you and I had been talking anyway, and I would say since Christmas time, this, which I had that second miscarriage in November, I would say since November, I've really been saying to God, okay, the acupuncturist like is right. Like I have to be okay. And I know the only thing I know for a fact deep in my soul is I will have more children. Now, how those children come into my life, I don't know. I don't know if that's going to be through adoption, through egg donor, through fostering to adopt, through my own eggs. I don't know. I just know that feeling. But I just kept saying, I have to really listen this time. I have to slow this down. So we started to do a second round and
let me just pause you right here. Okay. So, you know, I love that we can laugh about it now and look back in hindsight of how like obvious the signs were. But I remember talking to you and telling you, it's okay to ask God, please show me like a glowing neon sign. If I need to be hit over the head with a sign, please show it to me. And looking back in your journey of you had this uneasiness about, do I even go through this process? Do I even go through this with the lab? But still kept trying to move forward. Things weren't quite looking right. Like the eggs weren't quite right, but still kept moving forward. Find out they somehow never told you to take this vital medication that you needed. Still keep moving forward. Have a doctor that's like, well, you should probably stop right here. And so you stopped, but then you started considering another round, right?
Yes, because the doctor's office was saying, let's do another round. We're going to do a different protocol. And the thing, and I'm curious what you think of this, but I always find what's confusing in life is most women that have been through IVF have some stumbling block. There's a roadblock. Like it, these things are not uncommon in the IVF journey, unfortunately. Although I have to say, when I did tell people they missed a medication, a lot of people were very shocked. Not people weren't shocked that the meds didn't work, because that happens quite often, but people were surprised that they did not tell me to take a medication that they prescribed. People were like,
I mean, the whole thing failed because of that.
They're like, that's pretty major. Like, that usually doesn't happen. But the drug's not working, or a cycle or a retrieval being canceled, that is not that rare, believe it or not. So I kept thinking, well, okay, I'm not special in this situation. This happens to everybody. So I'm going to move forward. But you and I had talked, you had done that podcast episode that I listened to, and it was Worry Poof Be Gone. And I thought, I've got to, yes, you're right. Looking back, those were neon signs. But I said to God, I said, okay, if you do not want me to do this next IVF round, make it so clear. Make it so clear to me that I cannot deny that you either want me to do this or you don't want me to do this.
Natasha, yeah, just close the door. I remember that conversation with you. Like, God, just please close this door. And you are willing. That's, I think, important. Like, you get to a point where you're willing to have your path be closed off. Like, if this isn't right, just close it off. And what happened next?
So two things happened to me in the weeks leading up to this second round. One, everywhere I would go, I would get into an Uber. Within 2 seconds of being in the Uber driver would tell me that he was adopted and his brother was adopted and they loved their parents and they never even looked for their biological parents. I would turn on the TV and they'd be like, here in LA, they'd be like, oh, and tonight they're celebrating foster to adopt. 250 families in Los Angeles are becoming forever families. Now, when I tell you I would go to Maine, I would turn on the TV. They'd be like, tonight we're celebrating foster to adopt in Maine. There are 2,000 kids that need a home. Every freaking way, every time I would hear it. And then we order our second round of IVF drugs. They're supposed to be delivered on a Wednesday. That Wednesday comes and, you have to be around because you have to physically sign for them. And we had spoken to the pharmacy a week before. The manager of the pharmacy had given us a discount because the IVF clinic had messed up the first time. We were very clear. We had to have them Wednesday. I was going to start on Thursday.
Right, so, because with IVF, these things have to be on a very precise timetable.
Very precise. And a lot of the drugs have to be refrigerated because they're perishable. So you have to use them. Like if you get them, you've got to use them within 5 days or they're not as effective. Wednesday afternoon around 3:30, I get a canceled FedEx number. Your delivery has been canceled. It will be delivered on Thursday. So I call the pharmacy. Oh yeah, we're not delivering the drugs today because you'd actually said that you wanted them on Thursday. Oh my God, Natasha, I was getting ready to, I go, I need to speak to your manager. This is impossible. I spoke to this woman last week. I told her specifically. Oh my God. We went back and forth with the doctor's office. And then the doctor's office said, well, don't worry. You could just start. They'll deliver the drugs somewhere in LA. They wanted us to go to a FedEx pickup station. Like all this crap. Well, you can pick them up at the Beverly Hills FedEx delivery location at 12:30. Then you'll just take your shot. Then you can take another one the next day.
Like, forget it. Yeah.
I said, I'm done. I said to God, okay, you have told me, this is very, very, very clear. You have let me know. And so a lot of back and forth, I'll save you all those details, but everybody reimbursed us and I'm not moving forward with IVF. I think God is very clear. That is not our path. And do you know how you know it's a good thing? I'm so at peace. I never once think about
it. That's what I was just going to ask you. How do you feel now about stopping the journey of getting pregnant yourself?
Like I could fly. I feel when I tell you the relief of not having to go to San Ramon, which is 6 hours from Los Angeles, and spend the night in a hotel away from my bed. And a lot of people, by the way, a lot of people do this and they feel great about it. And that is their journey. They really do.
No shame to them. This is yours, though.
I have to tell you, I am so relieved. For the past month and week, I am over the moon.
Isn't that incredible?
Happy.
That's why I so wanted to have you on today, because this journey that you've been on for the last, you know, oh gosh, 6 months or however long, it was, I was there, you know, with you as a friend. And I know it was at the time it was vague and I don't know which direction I should go. And I know I want a child, but how do I get there? But isn't it incredible when you look back, you know, at the journey and how you got to this place of peace now? We are, as humans, the most stubborn creatures, aren't we? Like, look at all, I don't know how many times in my life I've done this and God, I could have saved myself so much heartache and so much emotions and just so much pain if I would have maybe just stopped sooner and said, okay, God, which way do you want me to go before I even get started? But I love that finally you got to a point, because I feel like sometimes we just have to beat ourselves down, at least for me, where I'm kind of desperate enough to go, okay, I give it to you. I can actually let go. I just want to be on your correct path, because my path, I keep getting all these roadblocks. I keep getting all this disappointment. I keep getting all this pain, that we're finally able to listen. And like, it's so beautiful at the end. You don't feel disappointment or sadness. You have that peace that transcends all understanding. It's just, it's beautiful. It sucks that it takes us so long to get there. But at the end, I mean, look at the difference between how you felt, the anxiety that you described before, the never being able to feel okay, even when you had a pregnancy going, just not feeling at peace, and how you feel today.
Oh, the relief. I can't describe it. It's like, it's almost as though you feel that you could fly. I feel so light. I feel so happy. I feel so present with my son. And I just know now, I just pray to God, okay, we've started. We're going to meet with an agency this week for fostering to adopt. It's like, God, if this is what you want, let it be clear that this is the agency and the way to go. And if it's not this agency, you'll bring us to the next. Like, let it be so obvious that this is what you want me to do.
Let me ask you now, sorry, now that you're going down this other path, how are you, like you're describing how you're doing it differently now, asking God first, how do you sit in the uncertainty until you know what decision you need to make? Like this time of waiting of what agency do we pick, or how do we even get started? How are you doing it differently this time? And are you feeling peace in those moments of still not knowing how this is going to turn out?
I think it, as hard as it is, and I don't know if you feel this way, but I think when you just wake up every day and you pray and at night, and I just pray throughout the day, I think when it's really meant for me, it's not that it's so easy, but I think that it's easier and it feels good. So that's really what I pray for, that it feels right, you know, that it feels like more exciting and this is the way. Then I've spent the past year feeling nothing but anxiety ridden and confusion and sadness and grief. And now I just feel, all I know is, I keep going back to Sarah, what do you know for sure in your heart? I just know I'm meant to have more kids. But now I'm just so, however it's meant to be, I'm not going to have any judgment. I'm not going to have any. And I know that's easier said than done for a lot of women, because I'm lucky to have had my own biological child. And there's probably people listening that can't even get that step. And that can feel very overwhelming and sad. But I just think I've realized there's so many ways to have family. There's so many ways, whether it's egg donor, sperm donor, foster to adopt, regular adopt. It just, there's so many ways. So I know if I want it, I just have to stay open and stay more, less anxious, less running around. Like to your point, I loved the comparison to your marriage. Whenever I get in the mindset of this has to happen, I, for some reason, it like, that's like the biggest red flag of it's not going to happen that way.
Isn't it? And you know, I love that you talked about comparing the two feelings, because we talk a lot of times, I used to call it always my intuition, this like this gut feeling if something was right or not right, like the little stirring that you felt at the one lab in San Ramon. And you know, if these last couple episodes we've been reading through the book of John, and John talks about how, you know, Jesus, right before he's about to die, he talks about, in my place, please send, you know, he's asking God, send my disciples, send my believers an advocate. He calls it the advocate. And the advocate is the Holy Spirit. And when you look up the definition of an advocate, it's literally the helper. And we have this helper. And I think lots of times it comes out when you're a woman of faith as feelings. You know, we go by a lot of our feelings as women. And to listen to that little intuition, Holy Spirit, advocate, whatever you want to label it, is so indicative of, where am I at with God right now? Am I really willing and open and listening? Because when you are, you get that feeling from your advocate, from your helper, that here's some peace, Sarah. Everything is, you're going down my path, so I'm going to grant you with some peace. And when it's that nagging feeling of anxiety and uncertainty, sometimes that can be a clue to just pause, reassess for a minute. Like, you know, is my little helper here trying to nudge me that maybe this isn't the right way? That's one thing I've had to learn through endless trial and error. Like, that's how I know when I'm on the right path, based on if I'm getting that peace or not, or if I'm getting that unrest and anxiety.
1,000%. And you're right. I mean, how many times do we all ignore that or push it to the side? And sometimes, you know, sometimes our anxieties are just that. But I think when you said it, you said something, when you slow down and you stop, that's when the answers present themselves.
Absolutely. And it's so hard to do when you want something so desperately. When you want something so bad, it is, and you can see a path in front of you, like, I have the money, my husband and I can do IVF, like, why can't I go this way? It is so hard to push the brakes and stop and pause for a minute to see if this is even the right way. And it's one of those lessons that I wish I could go back and teach my 20-year-old self, because I could have saved myself a lot of heartache. And it's not easy, not to simplify it at all. I'm going through it right now with something that I hope it's going to be an amazing story I can tell later and go look at God's testament. But it's an uncertainty that I don't know how it's going to work out. It will greatly affect my family. And I'm taking the week to sit and wait before I move in any direction. My mom said, just take a week to sit and pray. You know, Philippians 4:6-7, that's the one that's on the post-it on my bathroom. You know, when I'm in this period of uncertainty and I don't know which way to go, do not worry about anything, but in prayer and petition, with thanksgiving, present your requests to God, and the peace of God, which transcends all understanding, will guard your heart and your mind in Christ Jesus. So I'm taking a week to just sit in prayer and ask God for help. Like, this is what I want to come from this, but I'm so thankful for everything I have, and I'm just going to wait. I'm just going to wait and pray and seek by, you know, spending time talking with other women of faith, by reading my Bible, and just wait so I don't go down the wrong road, because I've done it so many times. And finally, I think I've learned in this instance, it's better to just wait, and God always seems to give us the sign when we need it. I can't think of any circumstance in my life or in the story you just told where we're just left hanging with no sign, you know, no closed doors, no guiding this way.
Well, and yes. Everything you said times 10, and without going into like a lot of detail, you and I had even a business situation a month or two ago. And I just kept thinking, and you and I said the same thing, like, let's just pray on it. You know, whatever's meant to be, it's not negative. It's not good, bad. If this is meant to be, this will unfold easily. It'll be right for us. Everybody will win. And it just didn't, right? It just didn't work, this situation.
And even in that one, we kept trying to make it work, because it was like, ooh, we could make some money, which would be really nice. But we kept getting that nagging feeling. We kept getting little doors closing, or more just obstacles and obstacles. And finally, I think we both got hit over the head enough that we're like, okay, God, I think you're showing us that we need to go in a different direction.
I loved that experience in the way that years ago, I really would have forced that matter. I would have sacrificed more items on my behalf. I would have encouraged you to do the same, encouraged other people involved in the situation to do the same. I really would have, because when I thought about that situation, I'd been there in other business situations where I'd forced it and it blew up and everybody hated each other at the end. Nobody spoke to each other and all those things. And 6 years, I was really proud of us because I really would have pushed. And that whole process, I just said, you know what? We're going to keep meeting. And if these meetings go well and everybody can come to the table and leave that everybody feels like they've won, great. And every time nobody felt that way. Everybody left more stressed and anxious and disappointed and angry. So to me, it was like, it's so clear that whole situation, that combo wasn't good. And that's okay. It's not like it has to be a huge, you know, big disappointment, all that stuff. Yeah, I had those moments when we were going through it. But at the end of it, I felt great. I felt great about that
exactly.
too. Good for everybody involved. Let's all go our own ways. Wish you all the best. Hey, we tried. That's it. Yeah,
absolutely. When you keep trying. And I love something you said earlier of, you know, a lot of women will hit some obstacles through IVF. There's reasons it may not work. And how do you know the difference between when I'm trying to force a square peg in a round hole, or I need to have faith and keep going? And it can be hard to, you know what I mean, to know the difference of, am I just forcing this, or am I supposed to keep going and have faith that it's going to work out? And I think the only thing I could say to that, and I'm right now trying to practice what I preach, is to, if we believe in the promises, I talk on here a lot about certain verses, and I will put them in the notes. There's a handful. And right now, I have every single one written out on a post-it stuck around my bathroom and bedroom. I go by those promises that assure us that if we take the time to pause, take the time to pray and be open to whatever path it is that's going to happen, and we make the effort to seek out an answer. And I always say seeking out by either talking with other women who lift you up or reading it in the Bible for yourself. If we're doing all those things, the answer always shows itself. It always shows itself. And you don't have to sit in that uncertainty of, I don't know, do I need to keep going? Do I need to stop? You could run yourself ragged, but God really does make it so easy that if we just do those things and pause and have faith in the promises, it's like five verses that I swear by, have faith in those where God just tells us black and white over and over and over, I know the plans I have for you, plans to give you hope and a future, not to harm you. You know, all of these, that God will give us whatever we ask for it in his name. Like I can go on and on, but I just have to tell myself right now, I believe in those. I believe that God will take care of me.
I do two things. I make a pros and cons list. It's three. I turn it over to God. And then I really ask myself, why? On a spiritual level, on a God level, on all the things you said that I want you to that God wants us to prosper, wants us to have a good life, wants us to be good people. Why do I really, really deep down want this? So the pros and cons list, I think, is important for women making a big life decision. And when I looked at my pros and cons list for fertility, okay, the pros, right? Great to use my own eggs, my own genetics with Dan. Okay, but that was about it. I started going through the cons list. It's like super expensive. No insurance that covers it. Age is working against us. We already have this beautiful, healthy son that's thriving. Surgery is a risk. Now we've got to go away from home. The hotel cost is astronomical. Driving there, Dan's going to take. When he would list it out, it was like, the pros. No, but if I were a 32-year-old woman, I think, and my insurance covered it, like I have a girlfriend, she's in her 40s, her insurance covers it. She's done five rounds, I think, and she has two eggs and she's going to do another one. Okay. If That to me is like, there's more signs that she should do it because it's costing her very little money. Yeah. She's going to a doctor.
This is all no shame on IVF whatsoever. Right. It's about the path that is right for you. And absolutely, I believe God uses IVF to help some women and has a plan for that child to come into the world that way. It's just about what is the right plan for you? What's the right plan for me? And the craziest part is that that right plan, even if it's not the way we pictured it, is the way we end up the happiest.
Yeah. Yeah. And I, you know, when I would ask myself, why do I really want to do IVF? In my gut, I kept saying, I don't. Dan doesn't care. That's not a good reason to move forward. It's really not. Dan doesn't care. He's open to adoption. He's open to egg donor. Of course, he'd love to have our own eggs, but he wants me to be healthy for KJ. So it's like, well, why am I really, really, really doing this, God? There was no answer. The only answer that I know for sure in my heart is I love being a mother. I love it. It's my favorite job. If the podcast went away, I could be a stay-at-home mom in a heartbeat and make sour. I mean, I'd be bored to death. I'd go online and act a fool, but I love being a mother.
Yeah.
It is that to me, it's like, okay, that's the only thing I want to do. And I'm not, for me. And again, everybody's journey is different. My girlfriend who's done 5 rounds, that's 42. It is so important to she and her partner to have their own child. And she's like, I know this is my path. Do it. You need to fulfill that. But for me, I'm like, I don't care. I've never had any hangups, whether the child's mine, whether biologically or not. So it's like, to me, that's where God is telling me, then Sarah, just let me guide you. Let me show you how it's going to happen instead of you doing all these crazy things. So now I truly, every day, I'm just like, all right, God, the adoption agency wrote me back. So I'm going to write them back. And then I'm just going to take the next step and one foot in front of the other and the next step. And you're going to just show me how our other children are going to come into our lives. That's it.
Exactly. I call it following the breadcrumb trail. I'll just follow the next sign you give me. And I mean, thank you so much for coming on and sharing something so intimate and so personal. I think it's really going to help a lot of women, and not just with a struggle of infertility, but for all of us, the big decisions we make in our lives and how we can do them better, and honestly, how we can make it easier on ourselves in the long run. So I so appreciate you doing it, and you are an amazing mom. And I have no doubt whatsoever you're going to have a whole slew of children, probably more than you can handle, and it will be you'll have your own reality show that then you can comment on with all of your beautiful adopted children, every color of the rainbow. It'll be perfect.
That's what I think. I think, oh my God, in 3 years, I'm going to come on your show and I'm going to be like, oh, be careful what you pray for. 5 kids and drive me bananas, right? And they need a ton of stuff. And what am I doing? And yeah.
And you're going to be so happy.
Are you kidding? I can't wait to get in that van and ride them around and just laugh and have the best time and deal with all their heartbreaks and heartaches and highs and lows. And, you know, and I love it. And, you know, for somebody like me, that's a talker, you know, having kids, it's great. It's like a captive audience. You know, they have to show up to your concert, you know?
They do. But listen, I have teenagers. At some point they give you a review on how bad the show is. All right, my friend, we could keep going on for hours and hours, but I think this was really meaningful to me, and I just know it's going to help a lot of women. So, and I'm going to leave notes in the episode description with those 5 promises, so you can have my post-it note verses, I call them, to just help you get through this time of uncertainty. As always, you can send me a DM. I love hearing from you guys at Ms. MS Pink Monster. And Sarah, people can reach you
at the Sarah Fraser Show everywhere, all social media, YouTube, everywhere.
Yes. And if you need, you know, your pop culture fix, I don't think there's anything wrong with some of us having a little time to just watch a little garbage to unwind. You can get all the updates on Sarah's hilarious podcast. But I love you, my friend. Thank you so, so much.
I love you too. I'm so proud of you for doing this. Thanks, Nat.
Thanks, Mama. All right. Talk to you guys later. Bye.